There's no greater magic on this earth than story. And because it's Thursday at 10 p.m., you've tuned into the perfect place to encounter that magic. So what's your story on KPFT 90.1 FM, the coolest place on your dial? Because we spotlight extraordinary tellers, both starters and stars, who share at least one thing in common. Each is an extraordinary person who engage us with stirring personal stories and treasured folk tales by taking us on enchanted journeys and then returning us safely to the present. And a show that can be enjoyed only on listener-sponsored KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication at the University of Houston downtown. You know, every story is a ride to some place and time other than the here and now. And although that's true for every story, children's stories probably make that traveling point clearer than other kind of yarns. And because they indeed take us far, the rich lessons learned from children's stories stay with us for a long time. Maybe forever. These stories do not tell us how to think. Rather, they prompt questions to ponder. Or to paraphrase English writer G.K. Chesterton, they don't teach us to fear the dragon, but teach us that the dragon can be beaten. Solid stuff for tonight's venue and an appropriate segue to this evening's guest storyteller. Born in Nigeria, Canadian citizen Kapila Love traces her ancestral homes to southern India. Trained as a children's librarian, she teaches early childhood music with parents and children at Houston's Prelude Music. Music surrounded Kapila throughout her young life and ignited her interest in singing. She fell into telling stories to children who she believes is more readily receptive to hearing stories than adults. And she doesn't see herself as a storyteller, although I really beg to differ, and all of you will too, as soon as you hear her speak. Kapila, thank you for being here. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thank you for
having
me.
I'm so glad that you're here. Tell us a little bit about Prelude Music.
I have one of the best jobs in the world, which is to lead parents and young children in song, to help them reconnect with the musicians from within. For children, that's very easy. For adults, it's a little bit more difficult because as you grow up, you tend to forget that there is an artist.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah, what is it about adults that force them to forget the magic of story? What do you think? What
Life,
happens?
Mortgages. Having
life,
to do the
mortgages.
Laundry.
Yeah, yeah. It's important to act like a kid. You know, Mark Twain said it best, I don't trust any adult unless he acts like a kid. Right? That's so
advice.
Important. You've got a few stories for us tonight, and
yes,
you love to merge singing and telling, and I know you're going to be doing that for us this evening. But what's your first story about?
It's called The Magic Orange Tree.
Look forward to it.
My version is from Diane Wolkstein's book of the same name. It's a story from Haiti. Once upon a time, there was a girl whose mother had died when she was very young. Her father waited for a while to marry, but when he did, the woman that he married was both mean and cruel. Of course, not all stepmothers are like that, but this one was. She would hardly give this girl any food to eat, and the poor girl often went hungry. One day she came home from school, and she saw on the table a bowl with three delicious-looking ripe oranges on it. She was so hungry, she picked one, she peeled it, and she ate it. It had to have been the most sumptuous orange she had ever tasted. Just so sweet, so delicious, so perfect. She didn't think anyone would mind, so she ate the second one. And after she ate the second one, she ate the third one. After a while, her mother, her stepmother, came home and said, "Who has eaten these oranges? Whoever has eaten these oranges had better say their prayers now, because they will not be able to say them later." The girl was so frightened, she ran right out of the house. She ran and she ran until she reached her own mother's grave. And there she sat, and there she cried, not quite knowing what to do. And there she slept until the sunshine woke her the next morning. She got up and stretched. And as she did, she felt something fall from the hem of her skirt down onto the ground. What was it? Ah, she bent down to see. It was a little orange pip, a little orange seed. So, being the kind-hearted girl that she was, she dug a little hole, placed it in there, and covered it with some dirt. And right in front of her eyes, magically, this orange seed began to grow. It sprouted. So she sang, "Oh, orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange tree. The orange tree grew. It grew to the size of the girl. And then she sang, oh, orange tree, branch and branch and branch, orange tree, branch and branch and branch, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange tree. And soon there were many strong, sinewy, brown, lean limbs on that orange tree, and it flowered. The most bright, star-shiny flowers that soon faded and were replaced by tiny little green fruit. And so she sang, oh, orange tree, ripen and ripen and ripen, orange tree, ripen and ripen and ripen, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange tree. And soon that orange tree was filled with dazzling globes of sunshiny oranges. This girl was so happy. Now she could make a little living for herself. She could sell some of these oranges and buy herself enough food to eat. She was so happy she started dancing round and round the tree singing, oh, orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange. But when she stopped, she noticed that it had actually taken her advice, and this orange tree had grown way up high, so much so that she could hardly see a single leaf. There it was, way up in the clouds. So what do you think she sang? Oh, orange tree, lower and lower and lower, orange tree, lower and lower and lower, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange tree. And it lowered back to its original size, and she very gratefully picked a few armfuls of oranges, and she took them home with her. The minute she got home, that stepmother saw those oranges and grabbed them from her, and she began to eat them, peel them and eat them, one after the other, until they were all gone. She then said to the girl, oh, you are my most favorite child. Will you please tell me where you got these oranges from? But the girl wouldn't say. So the stepmother said, ah, I know you need some shoes. Let's go shopping. We need to buy you some books and some clothes as well. I will give you anything that you want. Tell me, where did you get those oranges from? And the girl would not say. So finally, the stepmother took the girl's arm and began to twist it. And very reluctantly, the girl led her stepmother out of the house, down to her mother's grave, where that orange tree was. The minute the stepmother saw the orange tree, she leapt right up onto a branch, and madly, frantically, crazily, she swung from branch to branch to branch, eating every single orange in sight, stepping and trampling over all the tender shoots and all the beautiful flowers. The girl knew soon that there wouldn't be very much left of that orange tree, and so she sang, oh, orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree. Orange tree, grow and grow and grow, orange tree. Stepmother is not real mother, orange tree. And the orange tree grew, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And from way up high in the clouds, the stepmother yelled, help! And then the girl cried, break, orange tree, break! And the orange tree broke into 1,000 pieces, and who knows what happened to that stepmother. Everything came fluttering down, all the seeds, the leaves, the twigs, the stems, and the girl searched amongst the rubble until she found a tiny orange pit, which she planted and grew a whole brand new tree. She took the oranges from the tree to sell at the market, and she made herself enough money to survive. She's at that market every Saturday selling her oranges, and they all sell very quickly. Last Saturday, I went up to her, and I asked her, I have heard so many things about your oranges, these magnificent oranges. I would love to try one, but here's the deal. I don't have any money. Would you give me one for free? And she looked up at me, and she said, what? After all I've been through? And she gave me such a kick in the seat of my pants that that's how I got here today to tell you the story of the magic orange tree.
All right. That was beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I love watching you as you tell that story. It really unfolded right in front of you. You know, our listeners can't watch you tell the story, but you do such a beautiful job of gesturing and posturing as if we're seated right in front of you. You really do paint that very beautiful verbal picture.
Thank you.
And it shows throughout the entire story. What do you find exciting about telling a story that also includes music?
It helps me learn them. It helps music
Does
helps
it?
Me learn the stories.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just you learn the rhythm, the word use.
Exactly.
What does it do?
Both of those things.
Yeah.
Both of those things.
Yeah.
So the music, the musical component grounds me in a way that words don't seem to as much.
That's fascinating. You know, I love watching you tell these stories, and I because you know, many people don't realize, Kapila, that a story is just a bunch of words. They're a bunch of symbols. Mm-hmm. And these symbols are arbitrary until we do something with them.
Right.
They represent feelings and ideas and thoughts. And we have to be able to internalize them as a teller in order to find ways of expressing it and consequently painting that very real verbal picture. And it was great watching you do that because it really did unfold right in front of you. Mm-hmm. Stories for children or for adults who are smart enough to act like kids with storyteller Kapila Love on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. This is Hank Rubicek with Sidekick Roxy Russell. Roxy, you want to talk to us a little bit about what's happening out there? You're doing the boards beautifully, by the way. Roxy is learning everything. She's professionally ambidextrous, is what she is.
Very
you
much
know,
so.
She's learning how to be a co-host. She's learning how to be an engineer. You're going to be doing a pre-recorded Thanksgiving show in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing it all for absolutely nothing, like the rest of us.
Exactly.
But it is a labor of love, right?
It is. I could not ask for a better show to be on.
Yeah. How are you feeling about life nowadays? You're feeling pretty good, right?
I am feeling great. I'm really excited for the holidays. I'm going back home and seeing everyone. So that's
super,
that's
excellent.
Super fun for me.
Yeah.
And then the weather's starting to change here, which I'm starting to get used to.
I know it's below 80 degrees. And,
I know.
And if you really, I think I saw one leaf color change. It was someplace.
Yes, they don't change too quickly here.
They really don't. Listen, have you got a favorite children's story?
Well, I have. Growing up, I was really big into nursery rhymes. The nursery rhymes, Mother Goose nursery rhymes. Those were my favorite. I also loved the Berenstain Bears. That was my favorite.
Yeah.
Those
still
were
around.
My
still
good.
Yeah.
You know, my
still around.
My parents were. Me and my sister fought a lot, so my parents were all about the sharing of the stories. You know, we
That's
like
great.
To share.
Yeah, I didn't know your father could read.
Neither
did I. Yeah,
my mom did most of the.
Yeah, Roxy is my niece, so I know her father obviously too. Great guy, great guy. So you read a lot of stories. You did read a lot of stories as a kid. Right?
Yeah, got bedtime stories. Those were the best.
Yeah. What was your favorite Mother Goose rhyme? Nursery rhyme.
There are so many.
Jack Sprat could eat no fat. His wife could eat no lean.
Yes.
And so betwixt them both. Finish it.
Oh, man, it's been so long since I've read that one, so I don't know
Well, just
I
think
can.
About it. You have to make it rhyme,
right?
So they lick the platter clean. Thank you very much,
Oh,
Roxy.
You know
Good
all
job.
Of them.
I know them all. Listen, when you have a PhD, you happen to have a very extensive knowledge base, and the idea of knowing Jack Sprat is simply a part of it. It's simply a part of it. Kapila, you've got another story for us, and this one is the story not told, and you're saying that this story is not exclusively for children. This one is a little more generic in nature.
Certainly. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Looking
As
forward
with most
to it.
Folk tales,
yeah.
Which is one of their strengths.
Yeah, and we want to talk about folk tales. You draw from folk tales primarily, right? I mean,
love
you like
them.
Telling folk. They speak to you.
Very much so.
Yeah, they speak to you. And they teach us about culture. So much.
Yes.
And I don't want to keep you from the story, but we're going to talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes.
The story not told, the song not sung. This is a story from the state of Karnataka, which is in southern India. Once upon a time, there was a woman who knew a story filled with adventure and magnificence, but she would never tell it. And she knew a song which had great depth of emotion, but she would never sing it. This made the story and the song feel very stifled. They felt trapped. They felt suffocated. So much so that one day they said, one said to the other, "That's it, we've had enough. We cannot take this any longer." And they made a plan to escape. That very afternoon, as the woman lay down for a nap, and as her mouth opened just ever so slightly, out popped the story, whoop, followed very closely by the song. Outside in the material world, the story took the form of a pair of men's shoes. And the song took the form of a man's turban. And there they sat, outside the front door, not quite knowing what their next move should be. A few hours later, the woman's husband came home, and he saw those men's shoes outside the door, and he saw the turban, And he walked inside the house and he said, "Dear wife, do you have a visitor here?" The wife said, "No, it's just me." Well, he said, "Well, what are those men's shoes doing outside, and whose turban is that?" She said, I don't know what you're talking about," the wife said. But the man insisted. He became suspicious. He said, "Are you hiding someone in this house without my knowledge? Are you not telling me something that I should know?" The wife said, "That's just silly. You're talking nonsense. I don't know what you're talking about." And before you knew it, with the husband's insistence that there was someone and with the wife's insistence that there wasn't, they were arguing about all kinds of things way late into the hours of the night. Finally, the husband said, "That's it. I've had enough of this. I am going to go to the temple to sleep it off and to think things over." The wife said, "You do that. You know what? I have a lot of work to do." So the husband huffed and puffed, and he took himself a blanket and a pillow, and he stomped off to the village temple in the center of the village. And the wife prepared herself for bed and blew out the lamplight. Now it so happened that when all of the lamplights in all of the houses and all of the establishments of that village were extinguished, they would all gather at the center of the village, in that village temple, to gossip and to talk about the comings and the goings of the people and what had happened at the miller and the grocer's and who did this and who said that. Well, all of the lamplights were there except for the one from the husband and wife's house. It was very late in arriving. They all said, "We've been waiting for you for so long. What took you so long to get here?" So the lamplight explained all about the story from the woman and the song, and all about the shoes and the turban, and about the argument between the husband and the wife. "So you see," the lamplight said, "this is one quarrel that I don't think will ever be solved." And then they talked of all kinds of other things into the night, the lamplights. Meanwhile, on the ground there, on the floor, there was the husband, and he had listened to everything that the lamplight had said. "Ah," he said, "this makes a lot more sense now. Now, when the sun shines in the morning, I will go and I will ask my wife to clear this up, and I'm sure we can come to some resolution." So, true to his word, at dawn, he picked up his blanket and his pillow, and he quickly raced back home. And he had to wake his wife up from her slumber. He shook her very gently, and he said, wife, tell me, you know the story with lots of adventure and magnificence. Can you tell me the story?" And the wife had to rub the sleep from her eyes and stifle a yawn and said, what are you talking about?" And the husband persisted still. He said, "Wife, I understand that you know this beautiful song, this song with great emotion and depth. Can you sing it for me, please?" But all the wife could say was, "What story? What song?" You see, she had forgotten them both.
She forgot them both. I love the way you end a story. You know, I know that you're ending a story, but you let things linger. Did you know that? You let it linger in the sense that we're still engaged, even when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, folk tales keep customs, traditions alive.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
What was the custom and or tradition that folk tale keeps alive?
It's a cautionary tale. It tells you that if you have a story, it's your duty to tell it for the sake of others, for the sake of yourself, and for the sake of the story, which has a life of its own.
Yeah. Now I know what that means, but tell our listeners, what does that mean, that you have a duty to tell a story?
Mm.
How would you describe that? I mean, we have a duty to tell a story.
I suppose there's many ways to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
We're born into a society. We don't live alone. We depend upon each other for our survival, in literally, figuratively. And I think stories are one way that we are able to connect with one another and help each other.
And I think that's a wonderful response. Right. I do. I think stories teach us, well, remind us that we matter.
Mm.
We're not in it alone.
Mm-hmm.
We're inextricably related to each other. And the things that we do really affect one another.
Right.
Everything that we do touches another. And those gestures, those moments, really do define us. They validate us. They give us an opportunity to share thoughts and ideas about others. It's clearly a way of being immortal. What is the story about us? How do we want to be remembered? Roxy, it's time for Tip for the Teller.
It is.
And it's a segment when we learn something about storytelling from a question asked by one of our listeners. I understand we have a question from a teacher out in Fort Bend.
We do indeed. Kevin writes, Dr. Hank, I teach high school and am having a tough time coming up with personal story topics for my students. Ooh, good question.
Yeah, wow. Let's see. Well, you want to think about general areas from which students can extract focus episodes. That's a great question, Kevin. It really is. You know, for example, topics like what I learned in life. What does the future hold? What makes me proud? Do I have any regrets? How do I want to be remembered? Something I was just mentioning to Capula. Remind your students that it takes a lot of courage to tell personal stories and that they can prove transformative as well because they remind us that we are defined by our character, our courage, and our heart. Stories remind us that we matter, and the fact that you want your kids to tell stories well makes you matter most, I think, my friend. That's a great idea. The idea of coming up with topics is difficult. But, you know, think about episodes in our lives. And episodes are those moments that are really frozen in time. Your first kiss, your first job, what it was like when you went to prom. It could be virtually anything, something with richness and detail and something sequential. Everything that you experience in your life tell your kids matter. And the idea of teaching them how to learn the story, I think in some ways is probably even more important. They can learn it sequentially, or what's the most important thing, the anchor of a story. Capula was mentioning a few moments ago that she likes telling stories with music because it helps her learn the stories. And I think that in many ways, rhythm and rhyme can help us. So just tell your kids to keep telling those stories, and thank you so much for writing in. That was great. Listen, if you have questions about storytelling that you'd like me to answer on the air or want to be a guest on So What's Your Story, Roxy is about to tell you how to make that a reality. Roxy, you want to tell us a little bit how to do that?
Yes. It's simple. All you have to do is just send in your questions or story ideas to ruby.story@gmail.com. That's ruby.story@gmail.com, and we will get back to you. And please don't forget that on December 19th and 26th, we will have our call-in show where we would love to hear your 2 to 3 minute holiday stories.
Thank you, Roxy. Yeah, everybody make a note of that. Make a note of that. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to those holiday call-ins. And don't even think about missing next week when our guests will be some fabulously talented kids from Johnston Middle School. They're going to blow you away, I'm telling you. Roxy, am I exaggerating? Because you met those kids.
No, I'm super excited for that show. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we have lots more, and those kids will be here. We have lots of other wonderful guests.
Great stories.
So just be here on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston. Another great tip for any and every story lover in Houston. Visit the Houston Storytellers Guild monthly story swap on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at St. Andrew's House, 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out our site at www.houstonstorytellers.org for all the fun happenings like Telebration on November 23rd at the Black Lab. Very, very cool event. Capula, it's getting late, and I want to make sure that our listeners, especially those who are ready to go to Betty Bye right now with their little stuffed animals, hear a lullaby. And I understand that you have the perfect one for us.
I do.
Yes, this is going to be great.
Story. This is the riddle song. I gave my love a cherry that had no stone. I gave my love a chicken that had no bone. I told my love a story that had no end. I gave my love a baby with no crying. How can there be a cherry that has no stone? How can there be a chicken that has no bone? How can there be a story that has no end? How can there be a baby with no crying? A cherry, when it's blooming, it has no stone. A chicken, when it's peeping, it has no bone. The story that I love you, it has no end. A baby, when she's sleeping, there's no crying.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you. Who needs a sleeping pill?
You're very
I mean,
welcome.
That would calm anyone down. That is so spiritual. And I know that song, but where does that come from?
I believe it's a combination of songs from child ballads from way back when, centuries back.
Now, what do you like about that song? I know you know a lot of lullabies. Why that one? Why'd you choose that one? Other than the fact that it's short and we can get it in.
It makes you think.
Yeah.
It makes you, it taps into your natural curiosity.
Yeah.
Whether
it
you're
really
a child or whether you're an adult.
Yeah. Yes. What kind of songs do you like to sing?
All different kinds, but my favorite is any kind of communal music. I grew up around religious chanting, Hindu religious chanting,
mm-hmm.
that everyone participated in.
Yeah.
So I'm drawn to that, and Buddhist religious chanting as well.
Yeah.
Or also a group of bhajan singing, which is religious singing together, but it's done kind of as a call and response.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also love the Western traditions of singing in harmony, which you don't find so much from the singing traditions of India.
Yeah. How do those make you feel?
Joyful,
yeah.
Like you are a part of something and you know it.
Right.
You're directly connected to each other and you're directly connected to these songs and the generations of people who have come before you who have sung and to the composers of the songs
yeah,
as well.
There really is that connection. There really is, yeah. You know, what I love most about a story in general is that it really does force us to keep quiet and listen. And I think that C.S. Lewis really says it best. He says, you could do more with a castle in a story than with the best cardboard castle that ever stood on a nursery table. The whole idea of really tapping into your imagination, the idea of thinking about things and internalizing it is so much more powerful.
Mm.
The world is yours. You can go any place you want, absolutely any place that you want. This was really fun tonight. It was fun, and
thank
I'm
you.
So glad. And I want you to come to my class and tell some stories. And when I get you to
I'd
do
love
that
to.
Too, and thank you so much, Kapila Love, for your stories and your reflections. You are a storyteller incarnate, believe me. Keep loving a great story, and I'll keep bringing them to you. This is Hank Rubicek on So What's Your Story, one of the Power Hour programs on this Thursday night on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. Make KPFT a part of every day, and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and ease into the weekend right. Stay where you are, because Scooter is next with The Inner Side. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank Rubicek, always reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Sweet dreams.